Good morning. In our second case, 2023-0354, Craig Snodgrass, Auditor of Lorain County versus Sarah O'Leary, Tax Commissioner for the State of Ohio. Good morning, Mr. Funk.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Stephen Funk of the law firm of Retzel & Andrus, on behalf of the appellant, Craig Snodgrass, the Lorain County Auditor, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The issues presented in this case are purely legal. One, whether the Lorain County Auditor had the statutory right to appeal a final determination by the tax commissioner of the true value of the Nexus pipeline, and two, whether the settlement agreement between Nexus and the tax commissioner can extinguish that statutory right, particularly where, as here, it specifically said that it was not binding on others if they elected to appeal. And that's primarily a statutory question that turns on the plain language of the statute, which expressly provides that a county auditor may appeal a tax commissioner's final determination, and there are no limitations or exceptions to that rule set forth in the statute. So by dismissing the BTA, by the BTA dismissing the timely appeal, the BTA was essentially creating its own public policy reasons for dismissing a timely appeal that are not set forth in the statute itself. And this court has time and time again said that public policy should be determined by the General Assembly, and that the role of the courts is to apply the statute as written and not to impose its own exceptions or limitations. And in this case in particular, if the General Assembly had wanted to impose that kind of limitation, they certainly know how to do that. The statute is very detailed. In certain instances, school districts, for example, there are certain requirements that have to be met for them to appeal, and in this case, they did not do that. And if you look at the BTA's decision, they don't cite any statutory language or any case law that has ever held that a county auditor's right can be extinguished by a settlement agreement between the taxpayer and the tax commissioner.
I guess here's my struggle. Say we agree with you. Say we think that you're allowed to appeal. What are you going to argue on appeal? The tax commissioner clearly has an ability to compromise. I don't think you can really make the valuation arguments that you're making. You haven't raised any issues in your notice of appeal about the authority of the authority to enter into this or the validity of the settlement agreement. So, you know, what arguments would you have on appeal?
So in any appeal from a final determination, the final determination itself says this is the true value of the pipeline, and it set forth the true value for each year and for each portion of the pipeline in each county. So in that situation, it's a de novo review of that determination at BTA.
But it's not really, is it? Because you also have a statute that says that the state has the ability to compromise claims. Compromising claims means, obviously, that you have different views about what the statutory requires and that you've reached a settlement. So I don't understand how you would be able to, assuming you have a right to appeal, to challenge that aspect of it. So I guess that's
well,
my struggle.
Your Honor, we don't need to challenge the validity of the settlement agreement because the settlement agreement itself specifically says it's not binding on others if they elected to appeal. And in fact, it set forth its own remedies by saying that if there was an appeal, Nexus itself could file an appeal and challenge the true value of the pipeline. And so in both of those appeals, in fact, both sides, Nexus and Lorain County Auditor.
But if you would adopt that view, you would essentially take away the state's power to settle claims.
No, I don't think that's right, Your Honor, because
provided by statute.
No, it's not. They have the right to settle claims. What they don't have the right to do is settle a claim on behalf of the county auditor, which extinguishes the county auditor's claim. This court has never held that a settlement agreement is enforceable against a non-party. And in fact, in the cases that we cite in our brief, the Dillard's department store case says a settlement agreement is not binding on a non-party. And in this case, it specifically says it's not binding on others. And so at the time they entered into the settlement agreement, the commissioner acknowledged, I'm going to enter into a settlement agreement with you, Nexus, but I cannot bind any of the county auditors if they elect to appeal.
Then what is the authority that the state has under 5703.05?
It would be limited to settling claims, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they can.
Their claims aren't really settled then.
They're not settled with
respect to. Because someone else can reopen them.
And according to the settlement agreement, that's expressly what everybody understood and what would happen. You can't enter. You can't settle. It doesn't grant them the authority to bind other parties who are not parties to the settlement agreement. And so It doesn't mean that otherwise then the court would...
They weren't really parties in the litigation at that point, though, right?
Right, but the point is that you can't... There's nothing in the statute that would allow the task commissioner to prevent the auditor from appealing a final determination merely by entering into a settlement agreement with the taxpayer. If that were the case, there would be no final determinations. It always would just be an agreement for settlement purposes, and then there would be no appeal.
Well, if your client was satisfied with the initial valuation and then it's negotiated down, wouldn't that be at the point then your interest would accrue in wanting to appeal?
That's right, Your Honor. And so, and in fact, what happens under the statute is there's no opportunity to appeal until there's a final determination. So once there was a final determination, and the settlement agreement itself contemplated that it would be remanded back, there would be a final determination, there would be 60 days then for county auditors to appeal, and if any of the county auditors appealed, then Nexus would also have the right to appeal. So that was the way the settlement was set up, and there was an understanding that the task commissioner had the authority to settle a claim with Nexus, but it did not have the authority to settle, extinguish the rights of the auditors to appeal. They still retained that statutory right. They exercised it within the 60 days, and pursuant to that, then Nexus also filed their own appeal. And in both of those appeals, both sides are asking for the court to conduct Board of Tax Appeals to conduct de novo review of the true value of the Nexus pipeline. So everything went in accordance with the way the settlement agreement itself provided. And that really goes to that mootness argument that I think was being raised. This controversy was not moot until the 60 days ran on the appeal time for the final determination. So once those, and in this case, the appeals were filed within 60 days, there's no question that a timely appeal was made. Then the controversy then continued, and Nexus filed their own rights to appeal, and everything proceeded in that fashion.
What about the subsequent years that were wrapped into that settlement?
Right, and we believe that that's even the more egregious part of this case, is that there wasn't, you know, under the Board of Tax Appeals' own theory of the reasoning, which we disagree with, it would only apply to tax year 2019. It wouldn't have any application to 2020 or 2021, which were new years that were never the subject of the Board of Tax Appeal case. Now, we submit that the 2019 settlement also was appealable, and that's because the settlement agreement itself specifically said it wasn't binding on any county auditors, and certainly the task commissioner doesn't have the authority to extinguish a statutory right. What it really comes down to is the Board of Tax Appeals decided that they felt that it was more efficient and favored settlement if they were to enforce a settlement agreement that itself says was not binding on county auditors. They essentially created their own statutory limitation that the General Assembly did not itself create. If they wanted to impose a limitation that said that the auditor had the authority, I mean, that the task commissioner had the authority to enter into a settlement agreement that would extinguish all appeals of the county auditor, they could have done that, and they did not do that.
But I mean, the corollary is if the legislature had wanted the task commissioner's authority to compromise claims to be subject to approval of the county auditor, they should have written that in the statute. It just says that the tax commissioner can compromise and settle tax claims.
You know, Your Honor, that's not the issue. Isn't did the General Assembly say that they had to get approval? No one said they had to get approval for the auditors.
Well,
what they said
generally
was,
if someone settles something on behalf of the state, it's settled, though.
But not in this case, because in this case, the Ohio Revised Code, the General Assembly specifically provided that auditors had an independent right of appeal. And
so,
that was
so why doesn't
check
that, why doesn't that just mean that they can appeal and say that the tax commissioner didn't exercise its proper authority to compromise the claim? Maybe there was fraud, duress, maybe the final determination after the settlement didn't allocate it correctly among the counties. Wouldn't that be the way to read all this consistently?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor, because there is an independent right, a statutory right to appeal. So when the task commissioner entered into the settlement, they were not even purporting to settle on behalf of the county auditors. They were specifically stating, we are only settling with you, Nexus. It's not binding on others, and they have the right to appeal. And therefore, if they do appeal, Nexus, your remedy is to appeal as well. So that was all contemplated, and that's why what's very telling here is the task commissioner did not join in Nexus's motion to dismiss. The Attorney General's office is not here today to argue that the task commissioner's settlement agreement is binding on the county auditors. And that's for very good reason. I don't know how they could legitimately come in here and argue that the settlement agreement is binding on county auditors when they expressly stated in the agreement that it was not. And everybody understood that when they signed it. It says not binding on others unless if anybody elected to appeal. And that's exactly what happened here. There was a settlement agreement. Everyone acknowledged it could be appealed. Nexus sought to persuade as many county auditors that they could not to appeal, but one of the county auditors elected to exercise their statutory right to appeal, and everything then proceeded from there. The controversy was not mooted by the settlement agreement. It continued, and the Board of Tax Appeals essentially came in and decided for its own public policy reasons it was going to dismiss in a timely appeal that had been properly filed in accordance with both the settlement agreement and the plain language of the statute.
Why did they use the language not binding on others? Why didn't they just say auditors?
You know, I don't know, Your Honor, but the only others would be the ones that have standing to appeal under the revised code 5717.02. Others would be the county auditors. Everybody understood that. In fact, that when the task commissioner issued the final determination upon remand, it specifically said, this is subject to appeal under 5717.02 within 60 days. And so during that 60-day period, they reached out to the county auditors to try to persuade them not to appeal. But ultimately, they understood that they had the right to appeal, and that was not extinguished by either the settlement agreement or by the statute. You know, and when you say the phrase others, I think that's an acknowledgement that county auditors are not have an independent right. And that's really the key here is they made the argument that the auditors are somehow an agent of the state. Certainly auditors are agents of the state in certain respects, but with respect to tax commissioners' final determinations, the General Assembly recognized that they're not bound by those determinations. They have the right to appeal them. That's why it's an independent right. So they're not, with respect to appellate proceedings, they are not agents of the state. They have an independent right to appeal for their own reasons. And in this case, the auditor elected to exercise that right. And if they want to extinguish that right, they should go to the General Assembly and ask them to amend the statute. That's not the way it's been set up. It's been there for, we went back and looked at the legislative history. It's been there since before the Ohio Revised Code as part of the general code. There was always a recognition that we will give tax commissioners the authority to make these determinations, but we're going to provide an important statutory check by allowing county auditors the right to appeal. And that's all the county auditor is doing here in this case. It's exercising that statutory right. It's one that's recognized by the statute. It's one that's recognized by the settlement agreement. And there is not a single case. Nexus has filed a 50-page brief. Not a single case is cited that says that an auditor cannot exercise the right to appeal just because the Nexus or the taxpayer entered into a settlement agreement with the tax commissioner that itself said was not binding on others. So we believe that the Board of Tax Appeals erred as a matter of law, and we ask the court to reverse its decision. Its decision is not supported by the plain language of statute. It's not supported by the plain language of the settlement agreement. It's not supported by any of the case law. And we ask the court to reverse that decision and reinstate our appeal. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Kulawitz.
Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court, no one is saying that the county auditor does not have a statutory right of appeal. Our point is that the only cognizable issue on an appeal to the Board of Tax Appeals by the county auditor here would have been an appeal limited to the validity of the settlement agreement or the correctness
okay,
of the journal.
Okay, so say we agree with you on that point. That makes some sense, but I don't understand how that gets you to a jurisdictional point. I mean, maybe the answer is that they filed a notice of appeal. The notice of appeal was proper on its face. That's a merits question.
Right. And we get to the jurisdictional point, Your Honor, because of the interplay between the two governing statutes here under the imperi materia doctrine. You have the appeal statute, 5717.02, and that provides that county auditors and others have a right to appeal from final determination except as otherwise provided by law. And there are two ways in which the law otherwise provides. The first is that it specifies that a county auditor or others who appeal must include in their notice of appeal a short and plain statement of the claimed errors in the final determination of the tax commissioner. It focuses on the determination of the tax commissioner.
So they met that requirement. They have their claimed errors. Under your theory, none of those errors are will go anywhere, but why aren't they entitled to raise them?
That's right. They're not entitled. They can put whatever they want in the notice of appeal, but in order to be justiciable, though, it has to be an error that relates to the final determination of the tax commissioner. The final determination of the tax commissioner, from which they appealed, was one that simply journalized the settlement agreement.
But again, I just don't understand why that's not a merits question.
Well, you know, because every
people make losing arguments all the time, but that doesn't mean they get dismissed for lack of jurisdiction.
Your Honor, these were not just losing arguments. They were completely impertinent. They all had to do with
people make impertinent arguments all the time. And generally, they get dismissed on a motion to dismiss, not on
many in this court,
jurisdictional
too.
Stage.
Many impertinent arguments in this court, too.
Well, hopefully not this morning, Your Honor. but the point is, though, that as this court specified, you reminded us all in Deweese, in 2003, and just in August in PCM, that the errors, the claimed errors in this sort of an appeal, a statutory appeal, have to be limited to the final determination. And if you allow the Board of Tax Appeals to identify and adjudicate errors that are beyond what the tax commissioner adjudicated and determined in the final determination, then they're not reviewing the determination of the tax commissioner. They're going beyond that. So there's a.
But they've submitted a legal theory that goes to the final determination of the tax commission. That's what seemed to be enough generally for jurisdiction. Now, if we accept your argument or the Board of Tax Appeals accept your argument, it doesn't go anywhere, but they've still seem to have met the jurisdictional requirements.
But I think, Your Honor, the important thing to remember is there are two ways to get to a final determination under the statutory structure. One is to go through an adjudication of the statutory valuation methodology and enter that into a final determination. And that results in an interlocutory order because it does not become official until you go through the Board of Tax Appeals process and to this court if it goes that far. The other way to a final determination and the way that was operative here for this final determination was through the settlement, which is the second limitation on the right of appeal. The state of Ohio has reposed in the county and the tax commissioner the exclusive authority to settle tax claims. And that's exactly what happened here. On behalf of the state of Ohio, which is the real party in interest here, the tax commissioner and the taxpayer settled their tax claims. The moment that they entered into that agreement, the moment that they executed that agreement, it became official and binding. So what the consequences of that for an appeal from there are the merits, the other sort of a final determination, they are not at issue in that appeal. All that is at issue there, once you have a final and binding agreement, it's enforceable. It states the tax obligation of the taxpayer. There, then the only cognizable issue from that sort of a final determination on appeal to the Board of Tax Appeals is, was there authority, was it ultra vires, was there abuse of discretion?
That may all be true, but I don't understand why that's jurisdictional. I mean, typically, someone files a notice of appeal to this court, they raise an argument that's barred by res judicata. We don't say, the court doesn't say you can't appeal, you lose on the merits.
No, but you do dismiss. Trial courts, and in this case would be the equivalent of a trial court, the trial courts do dismiss on grounds of mootness, and that's exactly what you have here. Because each and every one of the claimed errors in the final determination were errors either in the prior final determination as to the 2019 assessment or as to the hypothetical 2020 and 21 final assessments. So there were no live issues between the tax commissioner on behalf of the state of Ohio and the taxpayer here. They were completely moot. What the county auditor brought to the Board of Tax Appeals was an appeal that it could not adjudicate because it was on completely moot questions. The Board of, as this court has reminded the Board of Tax Appeals numerous times, it has no jurisdiction over moot questions. And that's exactly what the county auditor presented to the Board of Tax Appeals here.
On the 2019, I hear you on the mootness issue. But the 2020 and 2021, was it even ripe?
Yes, Your Honor, the county auditor had exactly the rights specified by the General Assembly, which is the right to appeal from a final determination. Nothing in the settlement agreement or the final determination precluded the auditor from exercising that right, and he in fact exercised it. His right to appeal from the final determination as to the 20 and 21
right.
final determinations such as they were. The problem with his appeal is that the claimed errors that he included in it, that he wished the Board of Tax Appeals to review, all as to 2019 were moot,
okay.
and as to 2020 and 21, all related to a hypothetical final determination that had never occurred. The final determination from which he appealed was a final determination that simply journalized, memorialized the settlement agreement. There was no issue there. He exercised.
There was no issue. That's my point. It wasn't really ripe.
Well, Your Honor, according to the statutory structure by the General Assembly, the county auditor's right to participate kicks in upon a final determination.
5717.02.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's what happened here. The final determination right. occurred. He exercised the right that the General Assembly had given him. The county auditor is assuming that there's a right to appeal and a right to involvement before the final determination. And 5717.23 specifically provides that there is no such right. The statutory norm is that the tax commissioner issues an assessment, and then that becomes official 90 days afterward. And the General Assembly specifically provided in 5717.
Under your theory, then, the county auditor would have no standing, no basis to argue about 2020 or 2021.
Your Honor, the county auditor has the basis that the General Assembly gave him, which is the right to appeal from whatever final determination there is. And the final determination here was one that journalized a settlement agreement, which was in the full and undisputed.
So they did have standing to appeal this?
It did, yes. But what it could appeal was the final determination that was issued. And that was a final determination that journalized a settlement agreement within the full and exclusive authority of the tax commissioner. So that's the right that the General Assembly gave the county auditor, and that's the right that the county auditor exercised here. What he wants this court to do is to create an auditor's veto over settlements issued by the tax commissioner. He wants the court to create an
He wants you to bring them into the deal.
To bring them into the deal. And you can look at the legislative history over the past 100 years. The General Assembly has very, very carefully protected the exclusive responsibility and accountability of the taxpayer for valuation by the public utility personal property tax and the commensurate exclusive settlement authority. And it's done that by making the participation of county auditors an exception and not the rule. And that's what happened here. So he's presupposing a far different scenario of county auditor involvement in this. Let me just address the question as to the binding nature of the settlement agreement. The settlement agreement itself provides that it is final and binding, certainly between the tax commissioner on behalf of the real party in interest, which is the state of Ohio, and the taxpayer here. To be consistent with the governing statutes, 5717.02 and 5703.05, the settlement statute, to be consistent with those, the only thing that not binding on others if they elect to file an appeal can reasonably mean is that there's nothing in the settlement agreement that precludes the statutory appellate rights of others. The tax commissioner and Nexus could not, as parties to a settlement agreement, alter the statutory rights of anyone, and they did not do that. So it leaves that completely unaffected. And by the same token, they cannot expand the statutory rights either. This was a bilateral agreement, not a bicameral measure by the General Assembly. They cannot expand the statutory authority of the county auditor to appeal under circumstances in which he has no right to appeal to the Board of Tax Appeals. They cannot restrict it, and they cannot expand it. And as the Board of Tax Appeals noted, there's nothing in that phrasing that gives the county auditor a right to create an independent valuation. So what you would have, and the danger here, the county auditor does not explain how the final and binding settlement agreement between the tax commissioner and Nexus, how that can possibly coexist with the alternative valuation that the county auditor would create if the Board of Tax Appeals had allowed him somehow to explode the settlement agreement and run a statutory valuation methodology. Nowhere is that explained, but it would at a minimum be a real conundrum here, because you would have two official valuations, and you would get back to exactly the situation that the General Assembly tried to avoid 100 years ago when they converted what used to be boards of county auditors who determined the valuation of public property, public utility, personal property, when they converted that to a centralized system, a uniform centralized system through the state tax commissioner.
But how could it be moot?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
How could it be moot? I mean, I understand that the tax commission could say, look, you know, we're going to stick with our settlement agreement, and whatever reasons you give us, we're not really accepting them. But to say that it's moot, how does that work?
Because Your Honor, for any tribunal to have jurisdiction, there has to be a live issue between the parties before it. The parties before it, with respect to the 2019, 20, and 21 determinations, were the tax commissioner and the taxpayer. They completely resolved all issues and all disputes between them. They were the real parties in interest here. The county auditor has an independent right to appeal, but that's not an unlimited right to appeal. What the county auditor has is a right to appeal from a final determination. But the taxpayer and the tax commissioner here, they came to a complete final and binding agreement as to all issues between them. So, and that was journalized in the settlement agreement. When the county auditor saw Board of Tax Appeals review, there were no live issues to present.
So what's the county auditor's relationship to the Department of Taxation, the tax commission, the tax commissioner, once the tax is collected?
Once the tax is
collected.
Collected?
Yes.
The county auditor is responsible in conjunction with the county treasurer for assessing and collecting it at the local level. But the valuation is the exclusive responsibility of the state tax commissioner here.
So what does the county auditor ever appeal? What's their argument if they ever appeal?
The county auditor on appeal, just in a hypothetical appeal, Your Honor, the county auditor could if it were a final determination that adjudicated the statutory valuation methodology, the county auditor could say, hey, I think that property that you exempted, it was taxable property. I think that
does 5717.02 say only in the valuation adjudication, or does it just say the right to appeal?
It says a claimed error is in the final determination.
Right.
So it has to be an error that's incorporated.
So why wouldn't they have the standing to appeal the determination?
Your Honor, we're not, even in a settlement. Your Honor, we're not saying that there's no that they have no statutory appellate right. What we're saying is that statutory appellate right, if it extends to this situation, the only cognizable issue that they have to present to the Board of Tax Appeals is as to the validity or voidness of the settlement agreement or the correctness of its journalization. Because there were no issues in the final determination as to the working of the statutory valuation methodology. Okay. Those were completely resolved by the settlement agreement. So the argument is not that there's no independent right. We're not trying to extinguish whatever statutory settlement authority, or I'm sorry, appeal authority there is on behalf of a county auditor or others. But what we're saying, though, is that there are two paths to a final determination. When you take the path of getting to a final determination that proceeds from a settlement agreement, that strictly limits what the cognizable issues are on appeal, because the others would have been the...
But that's why I was asking. 5717.02 doesn't distinguish between settlement versus adjudication.
Well, Your Honor, it does in this respect, because it says you have to state the claimed errors that are in the final determination of the tax commissioner, and what the county auditor overlooks is that the distinction between the tracks is a distinction that makes a difference, because when you're appealing from a final determination that's a result of the statutory valuation methodology, what you are appealing is an interlocutory order. When that final determination comes out, it is not yet official, final, and binding, because it is subject to appeal for 60 days up to the Board of Tax Appeals and then to Your Honors. But when you get there by the other track...
But that's not what 5717.02 says.
No, but
that's my point.
Yes, Your Honor, but 5703.05C, the tax commissioner's sole and exclusive settlement authority, that's the upshot of that statute.
It doesn't say the county auditor cannot appeal it.
It does not say that the county auditor could not appeal it. That's right, but by the same token, Your Honor, the settlement statute gives county auditors absolutely no role in a settlement process, no veto. And if you for the settlement authority to be operative here, that settlement agreement, the Board of Tax Appeals properly recognized it as final and binding at that time.
Except so, what you said is that the only thing that could be appealed regarding the settlement would be the validity or the voidness of the settlement. So you're saying nothing about the substance of the settlement, only the basically pro forma procedures of maybe how it was reached?
Your Honor, that's right, because it becomes a final and binding agreement upon execution. And unlike a final determination that you get to after the statutory valuation methodology, those are subject to revision, correction, change, et cetera, on appeal to the Board of Tax Appeals. The Board of Tax Appeals can completely redo it. But when you get to a final determination that results from a settlement agreement, that's the terms and conditions of that settlement agreement are in place. They are final and binding. It is not, the terms and conditions are not subject to review, correction, change.
So if the settlement agreement was reached ultra vires under the table payment or something, they couldn't contest that?
No, well, Your Honor, the court does not have to decide that in this case, but that would be one of the an example.
But it doesn't say that in the statute.
No, but just by definition, Your Honor. I mean, there's no every public official is a creature of the Constitution and statute, and has only the powers and authorities granted to him or her
by the Constitution and the statute.
So, right. Just by definition, by operation of law, if it's an ultra vires act, it's going to be void. If it was procured by abuse of discretion, fraud, or duress, or something like that, I mean, just by the operation of law as applied to any contract, regardless of whether it's a public contract or a private contract, by operation of law, that would be a colorable issue.
So any contractual argument?
As to the validity of the contract.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. When you get to a final determination that proceeds from a settlement agreement between the tax commissioner.
Thank you.
So,
thank you.
Your Honor, we respectfully ask the court to affirm the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals, which correctly dismissed this appeal for lack of jurisdiction. Thank you very much.
Mr. Funk, you still have 2 minutes and 1 second.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to start off by just answering Justice Fischer, your question. I think that you're absolutely correct. The statute says you can appeal any final determination. There is no limitation or restriction in the statute. And that question was actually answered by this court in Adams v. Testa, which is a case cited in Nexus's brief, decided in 2017, where the court said in paragraph 32, and I quote, "Nothing in the plain language of the statute or in our case law that limits final determinations to those acts resulting from an adjudication." So in this case, they're essentially arguing that, and in fact, I heard him say it a couple of times, it became finding and final and binding. It became official and binding. It did not become official and binding on the auditors because the language of the statute, the language of the settlement agreement itself says that the settlement agreement is not binding. In other words, the values in the settlement agreement are not binding on the auditors. So in that situation, when we file an appeal, why do we need to set forth in our statement of claimed errors that the settlement agreement is not binding when the settlement agreement itself says it's not binding? Why do we need to claim that the settlement agreement is invalid when the settlement agreement itself is not binding on us? In that opportunity, we have the right under the statute to seek de novo review of the true value of the pipeline. And the statement of errors that we present regarding the true value of the pipeline are very similar to the statements of errors that Nexus presented in their notice of appeal, because the settlement agreement itself said that if, in the event of an appeal, the agreement shall not prevent the taxpayer from asserting a value that is lower than the values reflected in the agreement. And that's essentially what we did. We sought a value that was higher than the values in the settlement agreement.
So if the appeal went forward substantively on the substance of what was in the agreement, and the tax commissioner said, well, even though I have a binding settlement agreement with Nexus, I agree with you, and so I'm going to go ahead and reevaluate the property and increase the value of it, what's the consequence then to the state?
Well, it would be de novo review by the Board of Tax Appeals. So ultimately, the Board of Tax Appeals would determine what the true value of the pipeline was. And that would be binding on the parties. So we, both the tax commissioner, Nexus, and ourselves. So that would be the implication for the state. And that's ultimately what this is saying is, the appeal, in any appeal like this, the appeal is always what is the true value.
Except the state bound itself, though. The state bound itself, but didn't bind people or parties that weren't a party to that settlement agreement. So if the state binds itself and then changes its evaluation, is it opening itself up to a breach of contract and something in the court of claims?
No, because the settlement agreement is specifically provided that in the event of an appeal being filed, then Nexus would have the right to file their own appeal from the case, and essentially then everything would be litigated with respect to what the true value of the pipeline was. I mean, the settlement agreement itself contemplated this scenario. It was expressly acknowledged that it was not binding on auditors. Auditors would have the statutory right to appeal, and if there was an appeal, then there would be litigation over the true value of the pipeline. And
but that state said it was binding on the state and the property owner. But it does say that it was binding on those parties, right?
It said it was binding on the taxpayer and the state, but it also said that in the event of an appeal, then Nexus would have the right, would not be bound by those values and could argue for a lower value. So ultimately, what this comes down to is they're essentially trying to ask this court to impose a limitation on the right of final determination, appeal final determination, that's not set forth by the General Assembly. And the Board of Tax Appeals evidently thought it had good public policy reasons for doing that, but that's ultimately up for the General Assembly to do. And as this court in Adam v. Testa held, it's not in the statutory language, it's not in any of the case law. We ask the court to reverse.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement and you will receive a decision from the court. Marshall, please close the court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.